Welcome to the fourth episode of Demol Belkia Season 12 Recaps from Reality TV Warriors. My name is Michael Armstrong, and joining me as always is the Canadian who genuinely told us before this recording that he cried when he found out OJ died because people still think he did it, Logan Saunders.
Good afternoon.
And the guy who often offers his bonus banana around, David Bindley.
Good morning.
Good morning. Wrote that intro. It was almost a week ago at this point. You do have two alternatives, one of which was written by Thomas off of the suspect list, which is the Canadian whose country is responsible for the worst shame that can befall an Italian pizza, Logan Saunders.
Sorry.
And my other one from this episode was the Canadian who has many a video involving women doing manly things, Logan Saunders. So, you know, take your pick. You can have any of the three.
Just not the pineapple one. That is egregious. That is egregious.
We had good weeks.
Yeah, OJ died. What up with that?
I know, your hero.
Yeah. And he died of cancer. I mean, Norm Macdonald, who made all those OJ jokes, always said, oh, if somebody dies of cancer, it ends in a tie. But what about when it involves OJ?
Yeah.
Is it still a tie?
The good news is the cancer was not wearing a glove.
Yeah.
The cancer did it. Here's how.
Your week been good, Bindles?
Pretty good.
Massive handbrake from the OJ jokes?
Yep.
At least was the handbrake from a white Bronco?
First question for Saunders. Have you asked any old people if they can bleat?
Since last week, I've been testing the waters.
You had some homework, and I don't know whether you've done it because we've not spoken since.
I just didn't know how... I didn't think I would get a positive response to it.
Well, as I mentioned last week, it was my dad's birthday on Saturday. Luckily for you, I didn't ask my mum and dad if they could bleat.
It's my mom's birthday today.
Oh, happy birthday to your mum.
Yep, she turned 66.
It's my mum's birthday next Tuesday.
Yeah, it was my mum's birthday last week.
Ah, very interesting. I think we discuss this every year and go, oh, we all have mum's birthdays around the same time.
Yeah.
But you'll be pleased to know that I did do my homework, and I asked our resident old people if they can bleat for you, Saunders. And in an unaired clip from Tuesday's Hunted episode, let's find out what they said. I want to preface this by saying I am merely the messenger. This is an entirely Logan Saunders question that I do need to ask you guys. He had a theory last week during Belgian Mold. Once you reach a particular age, you are able to bleat like a goat.
What?
Is that correct?
What do you mean? I saw something. Did he tweet something? Or there was something about a goat. And I'm like, what is Logan on and where has this come from? And he was talking about age and I'm like, I can't even entertain this because it sounds stupid.
It was on Facebook. It is incredibly stupid. He theorized that once you reach the age of 50, you can bleat like a goat perfectly. And Bindles and I obviously heard this and thought this was absolutely hilarious and took the piss out of him for nearly an hour.
Why? Do our vocal cords change?
I don't know.
Like, what the hell? I am not going to try and even do it because I don't even know really what a goat is supposed to sound like.
I'm not sure. I'll have to do some research.
I did jokingly say to him on the episode, and I think I actually kept this in the edit, oh, I'll ask Ant and Michelle on Hunted. He's like, no, don't do that, eh? So I thought,
Can I just say, sure. I thought Logan was intelligent.
I didn't.
So I will play this clip back to him on Belgian Bowl tomorrow evening just to make him laugh. And hopefully more.
What else can we do besides a goat? Does it also mean we can do llama? How old was Tony when he did llama? Oh, for Christ's sake. Well, that's insane. Okay, Logan, come on. Come on.
So yeah, there's the answer, I think.
I think it's maybe more of a Canadian thing. I think it's a cultural difference.
Yeah. Michelle is such a spoil sport.
Michelle shuts that shit down so quickly, it's delightful.
She shuts it down faster than a kid in an oubliette.
Michelle heard it and she said, I literally can't. So yeah, I thought that'd amuse you. I've had that in reserve for the best part of 36 hours at this point.
I think that's the most, like, out of anything I've heard on over 10 years of our podcast, I think that's the biggest WTF reaction I've ever heard in a recording. Where they were, it was just pure confusion for a solid 5 to 10 seconds reacting to what you said.
Yeah. And that is edited down. That was about a minute and 42, I think. I think we ended up talking about it for about 3 or 4 minutes in the in the unaired bit of the episode. I chopped it down for this episode.
To be fair, you can't hear half of the faces I make when Logan's talking.
No. You can only imagine. On a slightly more podcast-themed note as well, Bingo, Fuzzy's performance last week, not the best. There was some genuine controversy over the runtime, and I'm pleased to confirm that she was 1 second off being spot on with the runtime.
Is this the whole, whoop, whoop, that's the sound of no Bingo?
Yes, it is indeed. And thank you for doing it.
Yeah.
So I don't have to. Fun fact, when the Bingo card came through, I was on my walk, and we were discussing it on our group chat, and the back and forth, whoop, whoop, it's the sound of no Bingo, did indeed happen.
You're welcome, everybody.
Now that will be part of the Bingo card, where if she doesn't get the previous week's Bingo, that will be saying, whoop, whoop, that's the sound of no Bingo.
No, don't say that, because then she's going to put whoop, whoop, that's the sound of no Bingo on the card 1 week.
Yeah, that's what I mean, yeah. She's going to start putting that on the Bingo card. So now we have to say, like, variations of it, like mop, mop, or bleat, bleat. That's the sound of a goat saying no Bingo.
This is all getting incredibly meta. I should also note that we have begun to record this year's Historians, and we're telling you absolutely nothing.
No.
Absolutely nothing. Hoo-ah, ha, good God, y'all.
We will be discussing that in probably 5 weeks' time if we record enough of the episodes by that point, which is going to be fun. The episode we recorded last week was more fun than I think we were anticipating.
Yeah.
Anything else with the preamble before we start this episode proper?
No, I think we reached the peak of it. Other than it being Happy Groundhog Day to Mr. Peak.
Yeah, good point. We do need to remember to wish Daniel Peake a happy Groundhog Day. He'll probably listen to this in about 5 or 6 years and then send me a message going, you bastard, stop it. It's not funny anymore. It totally is. So anyway, previously the final eight headed to the heartland of the Mafia, where Stephanie got a tattoo and Philippe got a haircut in order to identify the henchmen of Don Salvatore. Four of them were given a vow of omerta by the mole, while all of them faced the wrath of the Don in some way. Charlotte and Philippe were pasta-bombed, while the other six went into the test with a negative pass frog. After many green screens, it was yet again our prediction Philippe, who failed to avoid his close shave and was sent home. And it is day 9 in Acerreale. Gilles says they've earned a lot of money before the mole hacks into his speech and changes the wording.
I assume this is supposed to be a V for Vendetta reference?
I thought Mr. Robot.
Yeah, it's quite Mr. Robot. I think it's more sort of teasing us about the fact that the mole's just going to hack into the test at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Just vendetta is an Italian word. I just remember that from The Simpsons with the Italy episode with Sideshow Bob. Sideshow Bob is saying vendetta. I wonder what that translates to in English. Vendetta is English for vendetta.
And then the little kid's like, vendetta, vendetta, vendetta for me, Papa Bear.
So the episode title is I'm Glad It Didn't Succeed by Coco. In retrospect, and I'd completely forgotten about the episode title being a Coco one when I watched the execution, in retrospect, a little bit spoilery having that be the episode title.
That was in my mind going into the last challenge. I was thinking she probably has to go home because the quote hasn't been uttered yet.
Yeah. So they're staying on a farm, seemingly, and it has chickens! And Coco impersonates one, and it is just as good as Philippe's bleating.
Belgians. Or I guess she's not Belgian. Never mind.
No, she's Majorcan.
Majorcan. Majorcans.
And the best thing about it is she seems very proud of herself for doing it so well.
Cluck, cluck. That's the sound of Coco.
That's the sound of Majorca.
Yeah. Cluck, cluck. That's the sound of Majorca. Yeah, that sounds better.
Leave it to the experts, sonners. And we also see that Senna comes in with a cat, and Charlotte absolutely hates cats. It's my favorite running joke this episode is just any time a cat appears, Charlotte shits herself.
She would prefer South America, because South America, it's more dogs running around than cats.
And the water runs out, and Mikael finds an envelope waiting atop the pipes. And they must pick three people to act as plumbers. And he jokes that it's Mario and Luigi. And he's not entirely wrong. And Lynn says she does a lot of manly things with her hands at home.
And then Mikael says, you should explain that.
I did like that Coco was instantly like, oh, that's a job for the men, and then Mikael is the only one who ends up doing it.
Yeah. And they choose Mikael, Stephanie, and Lynn. They're all hoping that it's a Mario Kart-themed challenge and are very excited when they see the racetrack.
First, we have to get through Mikael singing Betty Davis Eyes. And I wasn't prepared for the jump scare of him singing that in a falsetto, but I guess he's half castrati anyway.
Yeah. I do have something to pick them up on here, and Bindles knows about this because we had a little chat about it earlier. Gilles, in his intro, says that Italy has the most famous plumber in the world amongst its population.
Mario is Brooklyn.
Yeah, quite famously, Mario's from Brooklyn.
Bed-Stuy.
And, I mean, I presume you guys know the story of why he's Mario, but he's named after Nintendo's former landlord in Seattle, who was the son of two Italian immigrants who allowed them a little bit extra time on their rent. So in his honor, because they were looking to rename Jumpman as he was at the time, they named him Mario. And now his official name, as of about 2016, they've confirmed this, is Mario Mario.
Just like, oh, they actually kept that from the crappy movie from the 90s?
Yeah, so it was never officially confirmed after the crappy movie from the 90s, but then I think it was about 2016, 2017, Shigsy did say in an interview that his official name is Mario Mario.
I like how the guy who played Mario in the 90s film, whatever the hell his name is.
Bob Hoskins.
What's that?
Bob Hoskins.
That's I thought it was somebody else.
No, it's Bob Hoskins.
His daughter's name is Marcina.
Who the hell am I thinking of then? Anyways, one of the guys from the original Mario Brothers movie was pissed off that Chris Pratt was doing the voice in the animated one and saying, Chris Pratt's not Italian. Why is he doing this?
You know who else isn't Italian? Famously Charles Martinet, who did the voice of Mario for God knows how many years.
He's French, isn't he?
He is also, spoilers, batshit insane because I've met him.
He has an interesting Instagram.
He is one of the most delightfully mental people I've ever met. I met him at Birmingham MCM Comic Con in 2019, the day before my birthday in 2019, I think it was. And I got him to sign a picture, which was far more expensive than it should be, as are all convention pictures. It was a picture that I've got upstairs of him surrounded by all the characters he voices in Mario. So you got like Mario and Luigi and Wario and Waluigi and Baby Mario and all that sort of stuff. And he signed it as himself, and then signed it as each one of those characters and did the voices.
That's awesome.
He is absolutely lovely. It was worth the money I spent on the picture, which I think was about £25, but he's mental.
He just retired from that role from doing voiceover work like last year, wasn't it? Like really recent?
He did indeed. And trivia question, the new Mario voice is Kevin Afghani.
Ooh, who's that? You can't just make up people, Michael.
It literally came up on a Nintendo quiz that I was doing last year, not long after he took over the role. So Gilles greets him there and says Italy has the most famous plumber in the world amongst its population. His name is Mario and he drives a cart. The plumbers will step into Mario's shoes as plumbers. The other four will race against Massimiliano, who is dressed as Luigi. All Italians can drive fast, but he can drive faster as he is a national champion. Everyone who beats him later earns €1,000 for the pot, unless Charlotte decides to double it. And she chooses not to.
She does, however, decide to double over in her cart while driving.
The plumbers must play a real-life video game where a camera moves across a Mario-themed course, and they must collect as many bananas as possible. However, as soon as the plumber goes out of sight, it is game over. The other four will be providing the guidance, and they can only see the scrolling game screen.
It's too bad that the B-A-N-A-N-A-S part from Hollaback Girl did not play during this level.
Yeah, they're not pandering to us enough yet.
We did get Coco just sort of entirely seriously suggesting bananas as soon as Jules said they had a secret weapon. And I'm like, she understands this show.
Yeah. She got the message. She knows exactly what they're about to do here.
Yeah.
I do have to ask, which group would you want to be in generally?
The Grand Prix.
Plumbing.
I think I would want to be driving, yeah. But also there is a degree of entertainment in just messing around on a Mario theme course, I think.
Yeah.
That's true. Go-kart you could do on your own. Yeah, I'll switch my answer, yeah. Probably doing an actual level would be much tougher to replicate anywhere else.
It is a real shame that they didn't theme it around the underground world so they could do the brilliant theme for it. The
The bus I take from my house to get to work, every time it pulls into the train station, the little sensor or whatever it is that tells it whether it's running on time or not just plays that little sting. And I don't know whether the bus company has realized that that's the Mario music. And like every time I'm like, oh, who's playing Mario? And I'm like, oh, it's the stupid bus again.
Surprised Nintendo hasn't jumped in to sue them because they are lawsuit happy. Mm.
So Lynn is the first plumber up. She grabs two bananas while almost running off the screen. And the other two plumbers can earn speed boosts by answering plumbing-related trivia questions and connecting a water pipe to the correct answer. And I do have the next note, which is, I'm sure Bindles really appreciates that Mikhail's doing this bit of the challenge because he gets very wet.
Uh-huh.
This is the James Wallington wet sound clip?
Yes, it is. On the subject of sound clips, did we have the Wilhelm scream this week?
Yes, we did. It was in the swimming pool the day after this challenge. It's when Stephanie jumps off of somebody, lands in the water. It was another Wilhelm scream. So I'm convinced that it is a hidden clue.
It has to be a clue. We're 4-4 now.
Oh!
Thank you. So once Lynn finishes the course, their time to get the speed boost is up. She gets 5 bananas, but they miss out on the speed boost because Mikhail messes with his pipes. You are welcome.
Yeah. His technique hasn't improved.
Yeah, he's not using his mouth. Well, he was using his mouth during this.
Yeah,
as well.
He was. His mouth was completely surrounding the whole circumference of the pipe.
Mikhail absolutely knows what he's doing.
Yeah, he's just trying to, make a seal with his mouth. And once a seal, always a seal.
And he is accepting a kiss from a rose.
Yeah, I was about to say, how do I incorporate that song title into what Pendles just said? Damn it. My brain was working
So Mikhail then goes banana picking while the girls go for speed boosts.
He is a banana grabber.
They're asked what the chemical symbol for lead is, and Lynn knows that it is PB. From the Latin word plumbium.
I just know it from school when they said PB is lead.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the atypical things on the periodic table. But yeah, it comes from the Latin word plumbium.
I always find that I always found it fun to memorize the element names that have no relation to the letter on the periodic table at all. Like tungsten is what? W. K is potassium. Hg is mercury.
So they get the speed boost and Mikhail gets 4 bananas. And then Stephanie's last up. Mikhail knows what tool to use for water pressure, and he plugs a pipe using his mouth, as we said. And she reaches the finish line before they can get the speed boost and gets 4 bananas.
Donkey Kong must be pissed.
Senna is given the bonus banana, while the rest of them get 3 bananas and 1 speed boost each. And they have to stay ahead of Massimiliano for 15 laps to earn the money. And almost immediately, Charlotte gets caught. She is genuinely dreadful at this challenge.
I wish Massimiliano would do the Massimiliano death stare as he passes each person on the race course.
He should just do like the Waluigi wah when he goes past them.
While signing his name, obviously. So the bananas must be thrown into a net to slow him down for 10 seconds. Senna tries the first throw, but then it bounces right back out. And the plumbers refuse to boost Charlotte as she's so useless, and she's taken out on the second lap, losing her 3 bananas in the process.
Yeah, that was not a good strategy on their part to let all of the bananas go to waste. But granted, Charlotte was passed so fast, but I was thinking, wouldn't they just want to try to get the... Especially whoever's in last should just start throwing bananas even on the first lap?
Well, I presume they could only throw one per lap, in which case... she only had two attempts at most. And the net was right before the finish line, so she had one attempt, really.
Yeah. Well, granted, she didn't catch on the one per lap, much like the one doubler per episode either, so she just doesn't catch on to that.
Senna and Bernard are on their fourth lap, but Coco misses the net completely, and they decide to boost her speed for 10 seconds. Bernard then throws a banana, and Massimiliano is delayed. Senna also gets one in the net, as does Bernard again. Senna then misses, but almost laps Massimiliano, and then he misses again, and Coco is very, very close to being caught. She gets boosted, but then spins out of control and is lapped, losing her two bananas. Bernard then has the one banana remaining and misses, meaning that it is just a straight race. Senna spins out and is no longer a lap ahead. Bernard is in more trouble. He spins out and is very much in the danger zone, so gets boosted by the team in the tower.
If this was any other season, they would have been playing Danger Zone by Kenny Loggins within about 2 seconds.
Senna crosses the line, but nobody realizes he's only done 14 laps. He gets overtaken by Massimiliano, and they lose another 1,000 euros.
That's the moliest thing I've ever seen.
Yes. Yes, it is. And we'll get to that at the end of the episode, but there's something about that scene that makes me go, have we seen a mole in action? Bernard then crosses the line, this time the correct number of laps, and they earn 1,000 of 4,000 for the challenge. Where do you think the mole was?
I think the mole was in the plumbing grip, because then you affect both parts of the challenge. Really, the drivers only affect the driving. And there's not that much they can do aside from, you know, let the enemy cart take over.
Yeah, this is the suspect list question this week. That is also a reminder for Logan Saunders to actually submit his suspect list this week.
I already submitted.
I'm proud of you. I haven't checked yet.
I submitted, I used my yoker, and I picked the plumber.
As I said to Thomas off of the suspect list when I spotted that you hadn't submitted an hour before it closed, ruh-roh! Someone's in trouble.
It's fun getting in trouble. But seriously, the most was in the plumber group. And my number one suspect was in the plumber group too. Tunnel Vizzy.
Yeah, I think the mole was in the plumber group as well. I actually changed my suspect list while I was waiting for you guys to come on to the recording. I swapped my top two over. So they make dinner. Senna says he's never cut an aubergine before, and Charlotte gets spooked by the cat again. And then everyone speculates what kind of sabotage actually went on. And Charlotte says that it was a fun day for exactly a minute for her. Lynn was scared of Charlotte because normally she steps on the gas, but she held back in the karting. Stephanie says it all went wrong with Mikhail being involved in the piping. He added a lot of unnecessary extras. Mikhail was annoyed it all went wrong because he does the pipe work at home, so his family will be worried. Bernard says Charlotte didn't use a doublet when there was a lot of chances to earn money. He would have used it. The number of laps is a failure of the tower. When she's swimming, Charlotte forgets how many laps she's done and just trusts others. Mikhail said they asked for confirmation that it was Senna's last lap. Senna says Lynn is intelligent, so it's weird that she failed to count the laps. And Coco says it's a shame that only 1,000 euros was earned. They have a great daring mole. Perhaps they are too daring.
I think just with, if you're one of the plumbers, there were just so many ways to pass off putting the pipes together as an honest mistake.
Yeah.
Or just choose the incorrect answer as well.
So they're chilling in the pool on the morning of day 10. Afterwards, they head to Castel Mola, definitely not a suspicious name, a village with fantastic views of Mount Etna and the Mediterranean Sea. Jill meets them outside the pizzeria, and if each of them do well on this challenge, they can earn 500 euros for a total of 3,500. Charlotte, however, cannot double it, as she has not got the doublers on her person.
She had one job.
I think it's going to be fascinating to see what Flanders' suspicions are this week, because people are going to be duped by Charlotte being quote-unquote suspicious this week, I think.
Yeah, that was just too much for her not to have the doublers on her.
Here's the thing. Halfway through the season, I don't think they draw as much attention to Charlotte quote-unquote sabotaging as they are doing, if she was the mole. And maybe I'll be wrong in 3.5 weeks' time when Papa Bear's sitting behind me cackling in my ear, but I don't think I will be.
Yeah, it's like the Anna rule, right? If one person attracts too much attention early on, you're supposed to fade them through the midway point of the season if they're the mole.
Well, the difference with Anna is that she was actually suspicious. Charlotte is trying to be suspicious, and there is a difference between those things. Charlotte's trying to attract attention to dupe people here, whereas Anna was low-key suspicious constantly and doing slightly sus things and putting people into positions where they could do sus things. Charlotte is just doing sus things.
Yeah. I do have to pick you up on one thing, though. You said Papa Bear.
I did. Because we've not talked about his new name yet.
Yeah, I know, because somehow we got through the entire first challenge without actually saying it. But I know, like, people in the Discord and all that sort of thing have been wanting us to call him Pepperoni this week. That is too easy. He's Cooper Patroopa. That is the reaction that deserved.
Bindles and I have both been sitting on that for nearly a week. The other reaction to Cooper Pa Trooper Pa is, of course, lights are going to find me shining like the sun. Cooper Pa Trooper Pa. So they must split into three groups. The dough for two candidates, the toppings for two gourmets, and super fast delivery for three candidates. They pick Mikael and Coco as the gourmets, and Senna and Lynn doing the dough, meaning that Charlotte, Stephanie, and Bernard are the delivery team. The more people who do well, the more will be at the grand pizza finale where money can be earned.
I did love Cooper Troopa being like, pizza is heritage, Italians don't joke about it, with sort of the implied, however, we are Belgians, so fuck them.
Yeah, however, you've seen this show before. You know that it's not just going to be simple pizza-related challenges. It's going to be mental.
Yeah.
And this challenge can only be described as mental. The only normal bit of this challenge is the transporting pizza boxes, which is kind of just there. Because you have Lynn and Senna throwing pizza dough over rooftops. Then you have the gourmets tasting really weird pizzas and Mikael stroking an aubergine, because he knows exactly what he's doing, as do the show for zooming in on that.
From pipes to aubergine.
Then you have the grand pizza finale, which is one of the stupidest things they've ever done in the history of this show.
I think you mean one of the best things they've ever done in the history of this show.
That is also true. We are 9 seasons into this show, and I cannot think of another thing that they have done, that we've covered live at least, that is as silly as this twist to the grand pizza finale.
I hear the main topping used was LSD.
It really feels like it. And also, in 4 weeks' time when we're at the finale, I think we're going to have to ask what's on each of the pizzas if they provide them.
Are we going to have to eat them blindfolded?
Whatever floats your boat, Saunders. I think I'm going to be genuinely quite wary of what they put on any pizzas they provide us with in the press room.
It's like Harry Potter with the every flavored beans.
Yeah.
Well, we've already confirmed there won't be pineapple.
You never know. They might just have a solid pineapple pizza in the corner. In this corner of shame.
Just one for Logan, where like the base is just a giant ring of pineapple.
Yes.
Jesus Christ. That would be the worst pizza ever. There was a pizza place that made these terrible vegetarian pizzas. And they said, oh, there'll be one with pineapple mixed in. If it's a few pieces of pineapple, you know, it's a bit more subtle. But these were like the largest pineapple pieces I had ever seen in my life that covered probably 90% of the pizza. It was terrible.
As much as I do not want to give Fuzzy an inevitable square of food sins, I'm going to ask the question anyway. What is your go-to pizza order?
I know Logan's a vegan, so I'm going to say Meat Lovers just for fun.
Well, that is very on brand. You are welcome.
I don't mind pepperoni, but I'm not opposed to a pineapple.
Oh, you'd fit in with the Matt Chisholm from Survivor New Zealand.
Yeah, like I wouldn't say like ham and pineapple is my go-to pizza, but you know if I go to a pizza place where it's like, you know, 2 pizzas for $20, whatever, and I can't find a second one, I'm happy to, you know, order that as the second one.
What about you, Saunders?
I usually do like green peppers, mushrooms, jalapenos, and banana peppers. That's usually my go-to grouping of toppings. And I also, we have a lot of East Indian pizzerias in town. So there's a lot of like ones with that use like the Indian butter sauce, and they use like that cheesy paneer toppings as well, and like chili flakes and stuff on it. So that's also my go-to as well.
Do you guys have like pizza counters in store at supermarkets?
No. We have like sushi counters.
Yeah, British supermarkets do. So mainly in Asda, there is a pizza counter in most stores where you can get pizzas made up and stuff.
Really? Yeah. Where you just go in and say, I want to order a pizza while you do your grocery shopping.
Yeah, and they take like 5 or 10 minutes to prepare it for you, and they can cook it for you if you really want and want to spend the extra money on that. But yeah, my go-to order is, and this makes me sound fat, I will say, I do put them in the freezer and then have half of one each week. I have custom pizzas, tomato sauce, garlic oil, and then I have ham, chicken, and bacon, usually on a stone bake base.
I kind of want to eat that pizza.
Oh, God, it's good. It's so good. And at least currently at Asda, you can get two of those and a bottle of drink, a big bottle of Coke or whatever, for £6.
Wow, that's a good deal.
Yeah. So I do that, cut them in half, and put all four portions in the freezer, and then just take them out when I want to eat them.
I'm kind of jealous. My local pizza place is $17.50 a pizza at the moment.
Jesus wept.
I know.
That sounds about right for like a small... Yeah, that's pretty much what it is here too.
So yeah, next time you you come to the UK, Saunders, we'll inevitably get a pizza meal now.
You know, what's funny is that yesterday I went grocery shopping and actually did go to the pizza place across the street from the main grocery store and ordered a pizza. Then went grocery shopping and picked up the pizza after I was done. So I was thinking, yeah, it'd be a lot more convenient if it was in store.
Yeah, but most big supermarkets, at least in the UK, have a pizza counter in store, as well as like your bakeries and maybe your sushi counter, as Bindle said. Or
yeah, we have a sushi counter here too.
Or halal counters if you're in an area with a significant Muslim population.
We don't have pizza in supermarkets. We have pizza in pizza places.
Oh, we have that as well. Just those are far more expensive.
We have 40,000 people and 19 pizza places in town. And I have eaten at all of them.
So Lynn and Senna get a crash course from Italian Justin Schiemann on how to prepare dough. And I don't know if he picked up that there was a subtle bit of tomato sponsorship in that challenge.
A tiny little bit.
The table was stocked with cans of the sponsored tomatoes that I've mentioned before. They must throw pizza bases from one roof to another. If they get 10 across, then one of them can be at the finale, and 15 across will mean both of them can. And they get 20 pieces of dough to try it with. And Lynn catches the first one, but it does have a hole in from when Senna rolled it out, so that doesn't count. The delivery team must deliver as many pizza boxes as possible along a hilly footpath up to the town. The only rule is that boxes must never touch the ground, and they've got 30 minutes. The more that reach the top, the more candidates are allowed in the finale. One candidate will be allowed for 60 boxes, two at 75, and three at 85. They currently don't have enough boxes to send even one person, but they can pick up more along the way. They find the first stack of boxes, and Bernard folds them, giving the girls mega towers.
The towers were ridiculous.
I mean, the logic here is actually quite sound, in that if you've got a large amount of weight, obviously pizza boxes aren't going to be that heavy, but in that quantity, it's going to be a consistent amount of weight. You want to have the heaviest amount of weight for as little time as possible. So yeah, maybe you do a light amount in the first stop, but I don't think you only do five.
No.
The logic is sound, but the tactics aren't necessarily for this challenge, I think.
It's like trying to push the stack back into position with your face.
That was the funniest visual of the whole challenge. Nudge it with his nose.
And they don't fold many because they want to be there on time, but both Bernard and Charlotte drop boxes. Mikhail and Coco must blind taste a pizza with different toppings on both halves. And they must remove the ingredient that is on both halves and place it on the plate. Mikhail, as I said earlier, does stroke an aubergine, and we get a close-up of it for some reason. They identify the red pepper and get it right. Another person will join the pizza party if they get two pizzas right, and a second if they get three. The second common ingredient is an aubergine, but they think that it's mushroom.
That does strike me as one that's particularly hard to guess, because number one, not really a standard pizza ingredient.
No, and in fact, I would go so far as to say a disgusting pizza ingredient.
Yeah. A food scene, if you will. Also, number two, eggplants are kind of famously an ingredient that absorbs the flavor of whatever they're with rather than having a strong flavor of its own. So
yeah,
it's kind of picking up all of the other flavors like the mushroom and the tomato sauce and whatever, but you can't really taste the eggplant on its own. That's kind of why they use it as a vegan substitute so often. It just kind of seemed very difficult compared to the other ingredients they had to guess.
Maybe they just wanted Mikhail to have to stroke an aubergine, to be honest.
Oh, it's another challenge. We need to get our phallic symbol in for Mikhail.
Well, I mean, he in the opening credits this episode, you know how like they normally have the cutaway to people's faces just sort of looking happy or whatever. And Mikhail's was just him with his legs in the air.
A potential Bindles banner, as Fuzzy put it last week.
Yep.
She's already promised us that she's got loads more for the Mikhail folder for you.
Oh, wonderful. Which group would you want to be in this challenge?
As the mole?
Yeah.
Or just generally?
Well, both.
I think me doing the taste test would have been very interesting and probably very good TV, but also not very pleasant for me. Mm-hmm. Given, you know, as I said earlier in this episode, I only put meat in my mouth when it comes to pizza.
Amateur.
I think I probably would want to do the pizza dough because that looks the most fun.
Yeah.
I think slugging up a mountain carrying pizza boxes does not look very fun. But I think, yeah, I would have struggled with the taste test challenge, I think. Especially knowing what this show is like. I wouldn't trust them.
I think, like, I probably would have, as a contestant, I would have wanted to do the pizza dough. As a mole, I think the pizza boxes were the right place to be. Because I think that's the
easiest. I was thinking that too.
I think that's the easiest one to really mess up.
I'm not sure, because the mole's logic here isn't necessarily mess up the initial challenge, I think.
Yeah.
If anything, the mole probably wants the most people to get to the final stage, because there's the most chance of chaos when it comes to the pineapple flying.
Hmm.
I think as a mole, you probably want to get a challenge that guarantees you get through.
Yeah.
Because the mole will want to be in the pizza finale to stop money going in. If the mole gets in a position of being sidelined, what more can they do? Short of maybe being the person throwing the pineapple, which I don't think they were.
Mm.
I mean, obviously I'm blinded by the fact that my two main suspects did get through to the pizza finale.
Yeah.
But I think if you were a mole, you would probably want to at least do well enough to guarantee that you get to the finale. And maybe in that case, you do a challenge like the pizza dough where, yes, you do it really well, and it seems like you're playing for the group, and then you can guarantee yourself a spot in that pizza finale. Where would you want to be, Saunders?
Yeah, I think I agree. As a contestant, I would want to be flinging pizza dough across rooftops.
It just looks the most fun. That's the thing. Like, if you're going to pick between these three challenges, you do the one that looks the most fun. And there is something inherently fun about throwing food across rooftops.
I hope you get the opera music when you do it. It just stops as soon as it splats into the wall.
Of course.
And I was thinking, too, if I was the mole and had to throw pizza dough across the rooftops, I'd have a tough time not wanting to succeed at that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think also, going back to the problems that I would have with the taste test, the four main ingredients that are on both halves on all the pizzas are red pepper, which, yeah, you can kind of see on a normal pizza, I suppose. Then it's aubergine, which you very much can't. Then it's gorgonzola, which is just a dick move from production. And then it's anchovies, which have no business being on a pizza. They're all quote-unquote normal ingredients, but certainly not normal ingredients you'd find on a pizza normally.
Although Fry from Futurama would have loved the anchovies on pizza. I hear he would have paid billions of dollars for it.
Your pizzas have two kinds of things.
So Senna manages to get 9 bases out of a possible 10 across the building before they have to swap. And Lynn's first shot immediately hits the side of the building.
Can you imagine just walking down the street in the village and getting pizza doughed in the face?
Well, that's the thing. There was the implication that the pizza box holders would be walking underneath, and that would be a genuine threat. And can you imagine if an entire stack of pizza boxes got taken out by Lynn throwing a pizza base across the rooftop?
Just a classic case of pizza dough, a rogue pizza dough flying across Sicily.
Whoop, whoop, that's the sound of pizza dough.
We're going to do that too much and it's going to seem like a clue.
But yeah, I agree too, mainly because Stephanie was in that group, but as the mole, I would want to be in the pizza box group because it's three people in that group and you can directly affect how the other two perform. Granted, in the other mini tasks, in the other mini games, you can affect the whole team, but it's you only get one person out of three, and then you really push for yourself to be part of the pizza transport. And that's exactly what happened. Stephanie was able to get herself to be the one representative in the final part of the challenge. I'm thinking, geez, Stephanie is playing the challenge exactly as I would expect the mole to do so. Tunnel busy, tunnel busy, tunnel busy.
So the couriers have an acceptable amount of boxes. If they reach Castle Mola with all of them, then all three of them will reach the grand finale. Mikhail and Coco fail to identify Gorgonzola, meaning they can't both go to the finale. Anchovies is the final ingredient, and after much debate, they get them, meaning one of them is allowed to go to the finale.
How would you react to Mikhail breathing on you
during
the tasting? It was more like a smelling rather than a tasting.
It's the Gorgonzola round as well, so it's super rank. You can just imagine the burps and farts that evening. Jeez Louise.
I was expecting Coco to do a Wilhelm scream after being breathed on.
So there's one more base to be thrown, and if it's caught, both of them will go to the finale. Senna catches it, meaning that both him and Lynn are through. Bernard makes a lucky catch, but then drops another box. They reach the pizzeria with 71 boxes, meaning only one of them can make the finale. Gio returns to tell them that four of them will be making the finale. Lynn and Senna are guaranteed, and Mikhail and Stephanie have volunteered by their teams. All they have to do to earn 500 euros each is transport four margarita pizzas through Castle Mola to a dining table on a pizza tray attached to a long stick. However, they must avoid the greatest shame that can befall an Italian pizza, pineapple being thrown from the rooftops. This fucking show. I have not laughed this hard at a Belgian Mole Challenge in years. Just the needlessly extra graphics for ananas. It's just so funny.
That's what made me burst out laughing out loud too. That's the loudest I've laughed in a while.
It tipped me over the edge, this challenge. I'd already been warned that there was something in the pizza finale that really set people off. And as soon as stuff started getting thrown from the rooftops, I'm like, that just looks like pizza dough being thrown. And then it came up on the screen as ananas, pineapple. And I'm like, oh, this fucking show. Jesus.
And Jill just goes in.
Like, normally if I don't have any notes on a challenge, it's because it kind of bored me a little bit, like half of Vidim this year. This time I was having too much fun to pause the video.
Yeah. It's a genuine delight. And when I said to Papa Bear at the finale last year that it is the smartest, dumbest show on television, this is what I'm talking about. This is so needlessly extra and stupid that I just love every second of it.
It is obviously no longer edible and worth nothing.
If it merely touches a piece of pineapple, it's immediately inedible.
As if all Italians have this deathly, fatal allergy to pineapple.
And then when Lynn drops her pizza, it's like, oh, it's worthless, or almost worthless, and then you just see the goat eating it.
It was a cat, wasn't it?
Cat, yeah.
I thought it was like a little goat or something. Or
no, it's a cat, because you immediately see Charlotte recoil.
Ah, that makes more sense.
Yeah. Wilhelm scream. Ah!
She drops both of her doublers as soon as she sees a cat eating the pizza.
Yeah. Just they land on their sides, and the doublers just roll for miles and miles through the Sicilian village.
So Stephanie gets struck by two pieces, and Lynn falls on the ground too, which means she must stay behind, but Stephanie's just becomes worthless. Senna also gets hit, leaving just Mikhail. And he earns 500 euros with his pizza for a total of 500 of 3,500 for the challenge. And Jill compounds the fun by saying he's happy they're not already being deported for committing such a food crime.
I don't want to break the challenge, but because you could keep going with the pineapple pizza, would it have been a good strategy to just stack the four pizzas on top of each other and just sacrifice the top one, let it get as much pineapple on it as you want, and just sort of keep them, like, use it basically like as an umbrella for the other pizzas?
So everyone still keeps hold of their own pizza, but you just use the top one as an umbrella?
Yeah. It's like a shield.
Yeah, that's not a bad tactic, actually. Which probably actually lends a bit more credence to the idea that the mole got themselves to the pizza finale, because obviously that's the sort of tactic you go, well, no, we're not doing that.
I hear that if all of the pizzas had pineapples on them, then the penalty was that they would all be thrown into the Mediterranean and be forced to live in a pineapple under the sea.
Who lives in a pineapple under the sea? Gil da Costa.
Sponge Papa Square.
SpongeBob SquarePants.
That might be even better than Cooper Patrick, for that, I'll be honest.
I'm so sorry, Jules. It's Michael's fault.
I'm not. He's going to have so many words with us at the finale.
He's going to have so many words with you two.
That's what I mean. Like, if it's anything like last year, he'll chat to us. He'll ask how sore his ears, and he'll go, well, sorry, I've not had a chance to catch up with your podcast this season. And then a few days later, I'll just get an email off and going, SpongeBob SquarePants? What the living fuck?
But that's the punishment if all your pizzas have pineapples on it in Sicily.
That is true.
That's a law.
So, Koopa Pa Troopa Pa does also bring them some warm pizzas to actually eat, and impart some news that they're leaving the area around Catania to head west, but with only 6 candidates. It is now time for the test. 20 questions about the identity and actions of the mole. Whoever knows least goes home except for the mole who can never go home. Lynn says that Philippe was her prime suspect, so she's had to pick a new one. If Charlotte was the mole, Coco would be really proud because she lied so well, but she thinks that forgetting the doublers was a genuine thing. Senna says that it's strange that Charlotte forgot with how focused she is in the game. He thinks he's on the right track, and he went quite hard on that track in this test. Stephanie says that Charlotte and Bernard dropped boxes left and right, but she didn't. She wonders if Senna held his pizza in the way of the pineapple to get caught. Bernard says that Stephanie carried well, but it could have just been a way to make the finale and then cost them money. Mikhail says Coco was difficult to do the taste test with. She had the ingredients mixed up. And Charlotte says that there was chaos with pineapple, so it's very easy to lose your pizza in the process like Lynn did. As the mole, there would be nothing more blissful. They are all then jump scared by the mole, watching them test. They were watching their suspicions, and the mole has a proposal for them. They don't necessarily have to go home if they did the worst, and the mole can correct 1, 2, 3, or 4 answers, but it will cost them €1,000 per answer. Only the money for the person who did worst will be taken if they accept the deal.
And that's how you can tell this isn't Vinna, because they would have just taken all of the bids.
Yes. Yes, they would.
You're now at minus 17,000.
And Jill says that the mole has been active and it could cost them dearly. Charlotte wills the doublers to Senna. And then Jill tells them the mole's proposal was accepted, including by the eliminated contestant. Each of them will sit at the screen and find out if it's them or not. And one of them will receive the message, you are currently the eliminated contestant. The mole will only correct the answers if the eliminated person is not exposed. The more answers that are corrected, the more chances they will get to work out who it was. Only one answer was corrected, meaning they only get one chance, and that is all that was needed, as it was a tie. Senna says that he went for 3, Stephanie 2, Charlotte 0 and then 4, Mikhail 2, Lynn 0, Bernard 2, Coco 0, then 2. Charlotte thought she did well, so answered 4, assuming that she'd need a lot if she was wrong. And we see that she went for 3, and then settled on 4.
She was easily persuaded.
What do you think the tactic is here?
From whose perspective?
As a candidate and then as mole.
I wonder if I could survive 2 chances. I would have probably gone with 2.
I probably would have gone with 1 or 2 as well, because I figure if you're far enough behind that you need 3 or 4, then you've got basically no chance of surviving the vote. I think 2 you could probably survive if you can lie a little bit better than Coco did. one should be doable, in theory.
Which it was. It was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Because this also goes against what Gilles said to the mole when he said, we're not going to tell you who got the red screen. Because if you think about it, the mole doesn't officially know who got the red screen. But in Gilles telling them, oh, you only get one chance, the mole knows who's going home. The mole at least has a shortlist of who's going home.
Yeah.
Straight away, as soon as Gilles says, oh, you only get one chance because only one correction was requested. So it's a very interesting takeoff of the Jeffrey Airport game, if you think about it. Because the mole doesn't know who's going home, but Gilles finds a way to lead them in the right direction.
Yeah.
Albeit a bit less subtly. Because if only Coco went for one, then the mole knows that Coco was the person who was meant to go home. Lynn says that Mikhail is nervous, he wants to keep money in the pot, but we don't see what he picked. Coco says that she split on three people, and Lynn, sticking with her morals, went for zero. She followed her moral compass and wants to be able to look herself in the mirror, and she wants whoever is responsible to know that they're cutting someone else's dream short. The 5-minute timer ends with 5 votes for Coco, and she did indeed have the deal with the mole, and gets her red screen. Coco's exposure means that they earn nothing for the challenge, but didn't lose anything. 1,500 of 7,500 for the episode, and 11,140 of 52,300 for the season so far. She says that she was really sure. Gilles says she played it nobly, but she's glad she didn't go ridiculous. Gilles refuses to let her put her own bags in. He says he's never let a candidate do it before, and he's not going to start now.
Yeah, he even put T-Bold's bags in the car. So, you know, he'll do it for anybody.
He hated T-Bold.
Yeah, he hated him. Yeah, like, whenever he saw T-Bold, that's when the Wilhelm scream came out.
What a dick.
Yeah. But yeah, Coco, not the best at deflecting attention there during that game. It wasn't even so much during the discussion. It was just that they picked up on her being really nervous when walking back to her chair. And her also muttering, oh my god, 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 I was executed, oh my god.
Yeah, obviously, the past 2 weeks I've suspected Coco in my top three. I didn't suspect her as much this week, even before I knew she went home, just because it felt like she wasn't doing anything suspicious this week. Compared to last week especially, the last 2 weeks, she's been front and center being really, really suspicious. This week, not so much. So she dropped down my list anyway. Obviously, it's a shame for me that one of your team didn't go, let's be honest. But I'm not surprised that Coco went this week.
And then, yeah, they were pretty close to voting Mikhail.
Because
he was suddenly really quiet, so it makes you wonder, did he want to be voted for? But Coco did such a poor job of just looking visibly stressed that there was no chance for him to get the vote onto himself. Because out of all the people he chooses to deflect the vote on during the discussion, he chooses Lynn. And Lynn is the biggest straight shooter out of everybody in this cast. Lynn's not really one to deceive the group. And I can't really recall a time where she's been deceptive.
No, she went for zero on the doubler gamble, if you remember. Because she didn't want to compromise her morals. She was never going to push that button.
Do you think the player who tied with Coco on the quiz knows that they tied with Coco on the quiz? Because we haven't really seen too much coalition discussion as to who is potentially working with who. Unless they're going to pull a Vidim and say next week, oh, by the way, you know, by the way, Rosario and Fonz have been working together since day one, by the way.
Belkia doesn't really do bunches, though. Not to the same extent. Certainly not in the episodes.
Which is kind of interesting, because Belgium sort of has a lot more challenges where the team is split up a little bit, where Vidim is like everyone's basically doing the same challenge all the time. Where like Belgium, you get something like the pizza this week, where it's like 2 people here, 2 people there, 3 people over here. And you don't really see them interacting as much until the final part.
I don't think we ever actually discussed the interview that Koopapa Troopapa did pre-season, where he said that they will always do these sort of challenges where they're in smaller groups because it's far more interesting to watch and yes, also easier for production.
Yeah.
It's one of the rare things that actually works out for both sides because in terms of the audience, it's really fun to watch people do different things and them all intertwine and all that sort of stuff. But also from a production point of view, it's a lot less stressful to have three people be focused on than 10 at the same time. So, next time, Gilles speaks to the mole again, Mikhail and Senna become Promethean men, Bernard and Stephanie get a Sisyphean task, we have some vibrating Jenga, mistakes are made, and it's time for a family visit, which I'm sure Michelle will hate. And that is also the one joke that I make about Michelle's family this week, given what happened in Sydney.
Yeah, that was... that sucked.
Yeah, I went to that mall when I was in Sydney.
Yeah, I don't think it's a shock to say that Michelle gets to talk about it at the start of Hunted and her family connection, because her husband was there half an hour beforehand.
Yeah, I went there when I was in Sydney, and it was like easily the busiest place I went to the entire time I was in the city. And like, you know, I spent time at the Opera House and on the bridge and all of that sort of stuff. That shopping center, I mean, admittedly, you know, it was a month before Christmas, so it was a little bit busier than normal. But that shopping center, I don't think I've ever seen a shopping center that crowded.
That might have been the same mall that Michelle and I went to. I got to ask her that.
It almost certainly was. She said she goes there a lot.
Yeah, because we had lunch there. We had lunch at a mall, and I was thinking, that sounds like roughly the area where we were. So that's kind of wild to think about.
So, do you want to eulogize Coco, other than saying the traditional, she gone?
She gone!
Gone.
That'd be way too loud on the edit. She gone.
It was a bit of a quieter episode this week for Coco. She was obviously a hugely fun part of the previous few episodes especially, and they even call out the Saputo Madre. But yeah, I wasn't shocked that she went, sadly.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that an episode that involves a lot of bananas, we execute somebody named Coco.
So Coco going home means that I'm down to just Senna, Mikhail, and Lynn in my team, and Logan still has Stephanie, Charlotte, and Bernard. And that does mean that whoever doesn't lose someone next week will be guaranteed the first finalist of the season. On first suspicions, two people, John Dolan under the name Jan Kuhn Supremacy. I'm not going to read that out every time you appear, John. I'm just going to call you by your real name because I know who it is. And April Bride 15 had Coco at number one, while two people, Natalie and Lone, had her at number nine. We now have a solo leader in the form of Yurine with a score of 23, while John is in last on 37. Interestingly, I know you guys love it when I tell you this. Between the three of us, Logan is the clear leader on 25.
What?
I don't love it when you tell us that.
And Bindles and I are both on 30, which is still reasonably respectable. I think if Lynn went, my score would drop dramatically. I think she was my number nine. The order is now Senna on 2.71 out of 6, Charlotte on 2.89, Mikhail overtakes Stephanie to go on to 3.25 with her on 3.36, Bernard on 4.25 and Lynn on 4.54. Our teams are still tied on the adjusted score with 3.5 each, but Coco is that big a suspect that Logan's team is now ahead on the non-adjusted scores on 4.85, playing my team's 4.98. You can, as always, do the Bothers Bar suspect list at the link in our bio or at suspectlist.rtvwarriors.com. And as I said, the bonus question this week is, which team the mole was in the first challenge? Were they a plumber or a driver? Flanders suspicions last week were Senna on 21%, up 3% from the previous week, Stephanie on 16, plus 1, Bernard on 15, plus 2, Mikhail on 15, plus 2, Charlotte on 13, plus 3, Lynn on 12, plus 4, and Coco on 8, minus 3. Final two questions, who do you suspect and who's going home? We have two suspects each from this week onwards.
So my suspect list, Stephanie number 1, Mikhail number 2, Senna number 3, Charlotte 4, Bernard 5, and Lynn at number 6. And I think Bernard will go home.
Mikhail number 1, I think the thing that interests me is, like, normally if somebody's in a group with the mole in the first challenge and they see something suspicious, they sort of can ride that pretty deep into the season. But somehow Mikhail is the only person from that talking group who's still in the game, which kind of surprises me. It's pretty much the only thing that's stopping me from going all in at this point. And then Senna, Bernard, Charlotte, Lynn, Stephanie. I don't think it's any of the women this year. I don't want it to be Lynn, but I think it is.
Interesting. Or should I say Lynn-trusting?
No, you shouldn't.
No, you shouldn't.
Yeah, it was worth a try. So I'm actually, just like Bindles, going to go from bottom to top this week. Lynn is still my sixth place. She will almost certainly still be my 0 point scorer until she does go. I hope she doesn't, because I'm sort of putting all my eggs in my team being the final three at this point, because I think they'd be very interesting, especially selfishly in terms of us being able to talk to people. I would love for our chats this year to be us, Mikhail, Senna and Lynn, being honest, and Papa Bear, obviously. So Lynn in sixth, Charlotte in fifth. She was trying too hard this week to be a suspect. I don't think they'd make her that blatant if it was her. Then Stephanie, still don't see what you see in her, Saunders, I'm afraid. Kind of by default, Bernard in my 3 point spot on the suspect list. Then Senna, and now Mikhail is my top suspect.
Yeah.
As much as I do think that it might be Senna still, and I might flip him and Mikhail on suspect list by the end of the week again, because Senna was number one up until this podcast, Mikhail has been doing some really shady shit in the past few weeks. I really want him to be the mole just because it means we're guaranteed to speak to him. And I think that will be a meeting of the minds that we've never had on this podcast. But I can't reconcile some of the stuff that he does. The one thing I will say for Senna, though, is that when he pulls in after the 14th lap on that go-kart, he does a look up to the tower like, are you morons actually this stupid to not have counted the laps properly? There is a glance that he does up to it just being like, I don't even have to sabotage here. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So that's what's keeping me kind of strongly on Senna as well. They are leagues ahead of the other four in terms of suspicions for me.
God, imagine how awful I'm going to be in the finale if it turns out it's Mikhail and I've been right this whole time again.
Yeah, I know. That's the one thing that I'm holding on to. And luckily, looking ahead, you're not in the reunion because you're away. So we don't have that unbearable chat. Although, actually, the reveal's done in the finale. Shit. Forgot about that. So you will be here for the reveal no matter what. Bollocks. And I think that it's going to be either Charlotte or Stephanie going next week. Mainly because I think Charlotte would be the quote-unquote shock boot mid-season where everyone goes, holy shit, she's not the mole?
Yeah.
It's just like, no, she's not the mole. She's just genuinely this clumsy. And like, Stephanie just doesn't have any story. I could easily see Stephanie going next week, to be honest. I also, last minute thing, want to shout out Jack Pitts for providing us with the most disgusting GIF that has ever been posted on the Bothers Bar Discord. He's GIFed Mikhail stroking the aubergine and slowed it down.
That's my boy.
Genuinely disgusting. And also, on that note, Jack does have a penalty for the suspect list this season for trying to stir shit up between us and Fuzzy last week about the runtime. I haven't forgotten, Jack. You are on my shit list. Anything else you guys want to say about this episode?
No.
I can't believe we got all the way through that pizza challenge without mentioning the bit where they're carrying the pizza boxes through the other way where people are, you know, busy airing their dirty laundry.
It's just typical Italian town behaviour. What can we say?
Also, pineapple is disgusting and it belongs only on pizza. Just keep it away from everything else.
That is a food crime. That's not even a food sin.
You're welcome, Fuzzy.
So, thank you for listening to our De Molvecchia Season 12 recap. We'll be back next week to continue the hunt for our newest mole in Sicily. Don't forget you can contact us on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube or Instagram where we are RTV Warriors, or you can email us and contact rtvwarriors.com. Logan's on the artist formerly known as Twitter at Logs of Grecky. Bindles is a Grim Recapper and I'm MJ Harmstone. You can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/rtvwarriors. Thank you to the Legion of Subtitlers. We will see you next week.
Peace out and just chill till the next flavoring.
I also thought this podcast was fun for one full minute.
I think you mean pizza out, Saunders.
Vu lives in a pineapple under the sea. SpongeBob SquarePants.